firstly from this beautiful woman saint of England, 1400s, a mystic, contemporary with Chaucer, as far as I know, the first English woman writer of any significance in our literature. And in those days, thank God, writers were also saints, mostly. Had a very deeply spiritual culture on which they drew. And she has this to say. Mercy is a sweet, gracious operation of love. It mingles with plentiful pity, protecting us and turning everything to good for us. God, in his merciful love, allows us to fail to a certain extent. And inasmuch as we fail, we fall. And inasmuch as we fall, we die, inasmuch as we fail to see and feel God, who is life. Our failing is dreadful. Our falling is shameful. Our dying is sorrowful. But yet in all this, the sweet eye of pity is never turned away from us, and the operation of mercy does not cease. Mercy is a property of compassion which belongs to motherhood in tender love, and grace is a property which belongs to the royal dominion in the same love. Mercy works, protecting, enduring, vivifying and healing, and in all of the tenderness of love, in brackets likening God clearly to a mother, and now taking the father image. And grace works with mercy, raising, rewarding, endlessly exceeding what our love and labor deserve, distributing and displaying the vast plenty and generosity of God's royal dominion in a wonderful courtesy. It's the romance language of the 1400s, and we'd need to put it in different words perhaps, but you get the point, don't you, of even when we fail, fall, and die, God is not changed, and he is there mercifully caressing us and gracing us. And a beautiful statement which I've seen attributed to Julian of Norwich, and having read all her works, I'm puzzled because I can't find it, but that's my own blindness, I assume. She says, I don't know where it is, in other words, in her writings, but she says, and I think this is gorgeous again, God, of your goodness, give yourself to me, for you are in love with me. Eccomi. What a simple, beautiful, limpid, uncomplex, other-centered thing that is to say. God, you're in love with me, so come on, give yourself to me. Well, we can pray that. And John of the Cross, who can't be surpassed when he's speaking of God's love. If you know Spanish, please read it in Spanish. They say he's the greatest Spanish poet. But in simple translation, in his spiritual canticle, he's now speaking of a very intimate love, beyond a lot of crucifixion, a lot of dark night, and within it, but it's a very refined love of God. But let me read it to you. He says, praying, when you looked at me, you might think of that icon that I had before you. When you looked at me, your eyes imprinted your grace in me. Pardon me distracting, but go back to those of you who have the pleasure of being mums and dads. Go back to when your baby was very young and you just spent those moments and many moments, I'm sure, just gazing at the child. Nothing to do except love. Well, the little child didn't know what was happening consciously, I suppose. And when we were babies, we didn't know what was happening. But our mother and father, in those early months of our life, actually gave us our temperament and our life, gave us what we are. Because as they looked at us, we learned, by gazing into the mother's eyes, we learned that we are worth wasting time with, that we're lovable, that we are valuable, and all the other things that you can put better words on than I. But here's John saying to God the same. When you looked at me, God, your eyes imprinted your grace in me. For this you loved me ardently. Ardent, fire, passion. And thus my eyes deserve to adore what they beheld in you. And that's contemplation, isn't it? You know that. Contemplation is not saying prayers. It's not reading prayers. They're beautiful things to do. Contemplation is daring to look into the darkness, into infinity, and believing that we're looking into the eyes of God and God is looking into you. And just like a child, we can't take it in, but trusting that and learning to adore the mystery. And that just does require discipline and space and faith. Perhaps more intimately, or certainly more intimately, he says in stanza 27 of the same canticle, and then has a comment on it, and I'm going to share both with you now. The poem itself, and then the later commentary that he wrote. The poem says, stop for a moment. The spiritual canticle was written by John for Carmelite sisters, so he tends to use the feminine as the receiver. Of course, it applies to the man as well. So it's as though a woman is writing, because he wrote it precisely for them, or particularly for them. There he, that's God, there he gave me his breast. There he taught me a sweet and living knowledge, and I gave myself to him, keeping nothing back. There I promised to be his bride. And in his commentary, among many other beautiful things he says about that verse, he writes, in this interior union, God communicates himself to the soul with such genuine love that neither the affection of a mother with which she so tenderly caresses her child, nor a brother's love, nor any friendship is comparable to it. The tenderness and truth of love by which the immense Father favors and exalts this humble and loving soul reaches such a degree that the Father himself becomes subject to her for her exaltation, as though he were the servant and she his Lord. So profound is the humility and sweetness of God. And he continues, in this communication of love, God exercises in some way that very service that he says in the gospel he will render to his elect in heaven. That is, girding himself and passing from one to the other, he will minister to them. Remember the Last Supper, Jesus washed their feet. God, we're told, God is love, and love can't, the worst part of love, isn't it, is when you love and can't give it because the other person won't receive it. And I don't know anything more painful than that, for whatever reason. And you mums and dads must go through this enormously throughout your life. Love offered but not received. Well, God is love, so God needed to express this love, and that's what creation is. And God needed to express this love so much that he needed you to express it too. Because without you, he had too much love to give. So he made you for this. And he loves serving, caring, forgiving, caressing, holding. John continues, he is occupied in favoring and caressing the soul like a mother who ministers to her child and nurses it at her breasts. The soul thereby comes to know the truth of the words of the prophet Isaiah. You shall be carried at the breast of God, and upon his knees you will be caressed. I'll conclude with two more brief sayings from John of the Cross, one just from a list of sayings of his and the other from a poem, one of his romances, and then I'll leave you. He says, O Lord, my God, who will seek you with simple and pure love and not find that you are all that he desires? For you show yourself first, and you go out to meet those who desire you. I suppose one of the key images that the mystics keep coming up with, and it makes sense, I might say, to me and probably to you, is that, you see, we can only love God according to the size of our heart. And when your heart is small, you can be fully in love with God, with all your heart. And that's good. It's beautiful. Little children, you see it, don't you? It's just terrifically beautiful love for God. And they've got a little heart, and that's all you'd want them to have. So God shows himself to us at moments of grace. And we experience that at a first communion, perhaps, or whenever, or the millions of times. But God can't stay there with you and me showing himself to us. Or we might think this is love and this is communion with God and we'd be so contented with it, we'd stay there. So God hides himself and leaves us with longing, because you don't long for what you haven't seen, but you long for something that's touched you but hasn't fully touched you. And it's gone. So what does your heart do? It opens up, it expands in the pain or the longing or the yearning. And love of God in this life, I think it might be true, is basically yearning, not possessing. That's heaven. In this life, it's a yearning thing, it's a longing thing. And so the heart longs. It can't go forever like that because it'd break too much and it would give up, perhaps. And when it's grown through the longing, God comes again. And we learn to love God with all our heart. And then it's gone. And we grow and grow And the people you know, these gorgeous people in their 80s or more, who are in love with God, the Mary MacKillops of this world, their hearts are so big, aren't they? As big as this church. And we know that the expanding of the heart is painful. It must be. But it's through that longing and suffering and losing and all the things which some of us, all of us know something about, and those of you in family know, you almost can't avoid it, leads, please God, if we hold on like this. May I say it again? O Lord, who will seek you with a simple and pure love and not find all that he desires? For you show yourself first, and then you go out to meet those who desire. Taste, have the perfume and long. And God will not let us long in such a way that we despair. He will touch us and encourage us. But he's encouraging us to grow. Now the romance at the end. One verse out of it. He's talking about the Word of God, the bridegroom. And in this romance, she is creation. Whole of creation. It's a beautiful image. Whole of creation seen as the bride of Christ. It's really Tyardian in a way. Teilhard de Chardin would have picked this up. So he would take her creation tenderly in his arms and there give her his love. And when they were thus one, he would lift her to the Father, where God's own joy would be her joy. For as the Father and the Son and he who proceeds from them live in one another, so it would be with the bride. For taken wholly into God, she will live the life. And that's offered to each of us here this morning. But it's actually the longing in God's heart, and therefore in the heart of Jesus, is that everyone will experience this. And in a really ecological sense, at the most profound theological sense, the whole of creation should joyfully experience this communion with God, to which we're all called. I'll now expose the Blessed Sacrament, and just there's a little taper down here that we might just light the candles while I'm doing that, and then we can have a little period of prayer, and there'll be Mass at 11:30.